Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive with us.
It's great to be back.
Today we're going to be tackling a pretty big question. One that I'm sure has been on a lot of people's minds for...
Oh yeah, for centuries probably.
For centuries, exactly. Can virtue actually be taught?
It's a really important question too when you think about it. I mean, it really gets at the heart of morality.
Sure, personal development even.
Exactly. How do we become good people?
Right. And to help us explore this... we're turning to one of the greats.
Oh, yeah.
Plato.
Of course.
Specifically, his dialogue, Menino.
Have you read that one?
Oh, yeah. It's a classic.
It's got Socrates in it.
Of course.
As always, you know.
It's always got to be Socrates.
Yeah. He's having these deep conversations. And this time, he's chatting with Menino.
Oh.
And he's a young guy who's really eager to learn about virtue. And we're also going to hear from Menidas later on.
Okay.
He's like this well-respected Athenian citizen.
Perfect.
They all bring something really interesting to the table.
Yeah, they really do. So our goal today, or I guess our mission for this deep dive is by the end, you'll have a really solid grasp.
Yeah.
Of all the different arguments that are presented in Menino.
Absolutely.
And you'll be able to like form your own opinion on this age old question.
Yeah, I love that. Make up your own mind.
Right.
So where should we start?
Well, I think a good place to start is with Menino himself.
Okay.
In the beginning, he really struggles to define virtue.
And he really did.
He comes up with all these examples. It's almost like he's trying to like nail down a swarm of bees.
I love that analogy. It's like a swarm of virtues. He's just throwing them all out there.
Exactly.
You know?
So what is it about his approach that Socrates finds so frustrating?
Well, I think Socrates isn't really satisfied with just a list of examples, right?
Okay.
He wants Menino to dig deeper.
Okay.
He wants him to find that common thread that runs through all the virtues.
I see.
Like, what is it that actually makes something virtuous regardless of the situation?
Okay, so it's like he's trying to figure out the essence.
The essence, exactly.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, what makes a bee a bee?
Okay.
You know, regardless of its size or color or whether it's buzzing around a flower or a honeycomb.
Right.
There's something that makes it a bee.
Okay, I get that.
And that's what Socrates is after here.
Okay, so how does Menino respond to this challenge?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does he manage to give Socrates like a good solid definition?
Well, he tries a few different things.
Okay.
One of his definitions is that virtue is the power of governing.
Okay.
Which on the surface...
it sounds pretty reasonable.
It does sound pretty reasonable, right? Being able to lead.
Right. Making decisions, all that.
Exactly. But of course, Socrates is going to poke some holes in that.
I was going to say there has to be a catch.
There's always a catch.
Right.
So Socrates points out that if we define virtue just as governing, then what about someone who rules unjustly?
Right.
Would they be considered virtuous?
So it doesn't really account for...
it leaves out justice,
right,
which
yeah.
is a pretty big part of virtue. It's kind of important, I'd say.
Yeah. So back to the drawing board from Zeno.
Back to square one.
Right.
I mean, I think we've all been there, though, right? Like trying to wrap your head around a really complex concept.
All the time.
And it just feels like the more you try to grasp it, the more it just like...
slips away.
Slips away, exactly.
So frustrating.
So how does Socrates help Menino get past this roadblock? Does he, like, offer up his own definition of virtue?
Well, he doesn't really give him a straight answer.
Okay.
Instead of just telling him what it is,
yeah,
he takes this really interesting detour
okay.
to show Menino how we actually acquire knowledge.
Okay.
And he brings in this slave boy who's never been taught geometry.
Okay. I'm already intrigued. What does a slave boy have to do with virtue?
Well, it's all about the process of learning.
Okay.
So through a series of questions, Socrates guides this boy to discover this geometrical truth.
Okay.
And he figures out that the square of the diagonal is double the square of the side.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty fundamental concept in geometry. Yeah. And he figures that out with no... like prior instruction or anything.
Exactly. That's the amazing part. He's never been taught this before.
That's incredible.
And Socrates calls this recollection.
Recollection.
He believes that knowledge is already inside of us.
Well.
Even if we're not consciously aware of it.
Uh-huh.
And the right questions can help us uncover that knowledge.
So it's like those moments where something just clicks.
Exactly like those aha moments.
Yeah.
Socrates even compares it to a torpedo shock.
A torpedo shock?
Yeah, because it often starts with realizing our own ignorance.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. I like that, the torpedo shock of realizing you don't know something.
It can be a bit jarring, can it?
It can, but it can also be really exciting.
Oh, absolutely.
It makes me think of all the times I've been stuck on a problem And then someone asks just the right question.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a light bulb goes off.
Totally. Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, countless times.
It's kind of humbling, isn't it?
It is. But also, like I said, it's exciting to think about all the knowledge that might be hidden within us.
Yeah, just waiting to be unlocked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So going back to Meno Socrates uses this slave boy example to show how we gain knowledge.
Right.
But how does he tie that back to the question of virtue?
Well, he proposes this hypothesis. He says, if virtue is knowledge, then it must be teachable.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right. But then he raises this really practical question. He says, but if it is teachable, where are the teachers?
That is a good question. If it's so important, shouldn't there be experts out there who can teach us how to be virtuous?
Exactly. And that's where Anytus comes in,
Okay.
our skeptical Athenian gentleman.
Okay.
And he's not impressed by the sophists at all.
Oh, the sophists.
Yeah, you know, they were those traveling teachers who claimed to teach virtue for a fee.
Oh, okay. So they were kind of like the self-help gurus of their day.
Exactly. And Anytus sees them as total charlatans.
Huh?
He thinks any decent Athenian citizen can teach virtue just through good example and upbringing.
So he's more of a lead by example kind of guy.
Absolutely, he believes in the power of a good role model.
Okay, I can see that.
Hey.
But do you think Socrates agrees with him?
Well, not quite. He challenges Amidas with a bunch of counterexamples.
Like what?
Well, he brings up famous Athenian leaders like Themistocles and Pericles,
Okay.
who were widely considered to be virtuous men,
Right.
but their sons.
Oh, no.
Well, let's just say they didn't exactly follow in their father's footsteps.
Oh, so even with the best role models right there at home, these sons didn't inherit their father's virtue.
It seems not.
That's a pretty strong argument against Anytus's feet, wouldn't you say?
It definitely throws a wrench in his assumptions.
Yeah, for sure. And it also makes me wonder, do we believe that virtue is mainly a product of like upbringing and environment?
Right.
Or is there something more to it? Like
Yeah.
maybe some innate quality
Right.
that can't be taught, but is somehow just
Present within us.
present within us. Yeah.
It's a really interesting question.
It is. So what do you think? Are you leaning more towards Aeneas's view or Socrates?
I'm not sure I'm ready to choose sides just yet.
Okay, fair enough.
But Socrates does have a way of making you question everything.
He really does. He always keeps you on your toes. And speaking of keeping us on our toes, I hear he introduces this whole new concept into the debate,
He does.
something called right opinion.
Oh, yes. That's where things get really interesting.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Yeah.
Tell me more about this right opinion business.
Well, first, we need to understand how Socrates distinguishes it from knowledge.
Okay.
So, right opinion, according to Socrates, can actually lead you to make virtuous choices, even if you don't fully understand why those choices are
You
virtuous.
might be doing the right thing, but not necessarily for the right reasons.
Exactly. It's like having a gut feeling
Okay.
that guides you in the right direction, even if you can't really explain why.
I see.
And Socrates uses this really vivid analogy to explain it.
Okay.
He talks about the statues of Daedalus,
Statues of Daedalus.
which were so lifelike
Okay.
that they would actually run away.
Wait, statues running away.
I know, right? It sounds crazy.
That's wild.
But Socrates says that right opinions are kind of like those statues.
Okay.
They're valuable. They can even lead to good outcomes, but they can easily walk off.
Because they're not like tied down or something.
Exactly. They're not anchored in a deep understanding of why they're right.
I see. So it's like they're not firmly rooted in knowledge.
Precisely.
They're kind of fleeting, almost like a lucky guess.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay. So would you say that someone who consistently acts virtuously based on right opinion is less virtuous than someone who acts from true knowledge?
That's a tough question, and it's one that Socrates grapples with in the dialogue.
Okay.
And it leads him to a pretty radical
Oh,
conclusion.
what's that?
He suggests that maybe, just maybe, true virtue isn't something we can learn or develop at all.
Hold on, you're saying it's not about knowledge or right opinion?
That's right.
Then where does it come from?
Socrates proposes that true virtue might be a divine gift,
A divine gift.
something bestowed upon us by the gods.
Wait, so are you saying that some people are just born virtuous?
Not exactly. He doesn't mean it's purely a matter of fate or luck.
Okay.
But he's suggesting that true virtue might be something that's given to us, something that comes from a source beyond our conscious control.
This is blowing my mind. It makes you wonder about those Athenian statesmen Socrates mentioned earlier.
Right.
Maybe their achievements weren't due to their like wisdom or knowledge,
Ah.
but because they were divinely inspired.
It's a fascinating possibility, isn't it?
It really is, and it challenges our typical ideas about how we develop morally.
For sure.
Like, if virtue is a divine gift, does that mean we're just puppets of the gods?
Right.
With no real say in our own moral development?
That's a big question.
It is. It almost makes you wonder, what's the point of even trying to be good?
Yeah, if it's all up to the gods anyway.
Right.
And this raises another important point.
What's that?
If virtue is divinely inspired,
yeah,
does that diminish our responsibility for our actions? Mm-hmm. Where does free will fit into all of this?
I don't know if I have an answer to that one.
It's a tough one.
But it definitely makes you think about the role of intuition, inspiration, even things like conscience.
Right.
In our own lives.
It definitely complicates things.
It does. Socrates really leaves us with a lot to ponder.
He sure does. It really does. I mean, it really makes you rethink things.
Okay, so let's try to like recap a little bit
right.
what we've talked about so far.
Yeah.
We started with all of Mageno's different definitions of virtue.
Right.
And then Socrates' idea of knowledge being this kind of recollection.
Uh-huh.
And then we get to this crazy concept of virtue as a divine gift.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. And I feel like we've covered so much, but I also feel we have more questions than answers.
Well, that's Socrates for you.
That's true.
Always leaving us with more questions.
Always keeping us thinking. So to all our listeners out there, here's a final thought for you to ponder.
Okay.
If virtue, this divine gift,
yeah,
how can we cultivate it? Is it something that we can like attract, you know, through our actions? Maybe our intentions,
right.
Our way of being in the world.
That's a great question.
Or are we just stuck kind of hoping that...
At the mercy of the gods.
At the mercy of the gods, exactly.
It's crossing our fingers.
Yeah, hoping to get lucky.
Right.
It's a tough one.
It is. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to be open to those moments of inspiration. Mm. You know, those insights that feel like they come from somewhere beyond us.
Okay.
But maybe we also have to put in the work. You know,
right.
Actively seek knowledge, reflect on ourselves.
Yeah.
Really try to live in accordance with what we believe is right.
So it's almost like we're setting the stage for virtue to arrive.
I love that.
Making ourselves receptive to it.
Yeah, like creating the conditions for it to flourish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe that act of seeking and striving is what makes us worthy.
Right.
Of receiving that gift in the first place.
It's a beautiful thought.
It is. That's a really beautiful thought.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect place to wrap things up today.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Plato's Meano.
It's been a pleasure.
And until next time.
Yeah.
Keep those minds curious and those questions going.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, when you start thinking about virtue in this way,
mm-hmm.
it kind of changes your whole perspective.
It does. It really does. Okay, so let's recap what we've talked about today.
Okay, sounds good.
We started by looking at all those different ways Meano tried to define virtue.
Right, all those examples he came up with.
Exactly. Then we got into Socrates' idea that knowledge is actually like a kind of remembering.
Yeah, recollection.
Right, and then we landed on this pretty mind-blowing concept of virtue being...
A divine gift.
A divine gift. It's a lot to take in.
It is. It really is.
And even though we've covered a lot of ground... I still feel like...
Oh, yeah, me too.
We're left with more questions than answers.
Well, that's the beauty of philosophy, isn't it?
I guess so.
It's not about finding all the answers. It's more about asking the right questions.
That's true. So for all of you listening out there, here's a final question to ponder.
Okay.
If virtue really is this divine gift,
mm-hmm.
how can we cultivate it?
Mm.
Is it something we can attract?
Yeah.
Through our actions, our intentions, our way of being in the world.
I mean, that's a really interesting way to think about it.
Or are we just at the mercy of the gods, just hoping to get lucky?
You know, it's funny because Socrates doesn't really give us a clear answer on that.
He doesn't.
No, but maybe that's the point.
What do you mean?
Maybe it's up to each of us to figure that out for ourselves.
So you're saying there's no right or wrong answer?
I think that's exactly what Socrates would say.
That sounds about right.
It's about the journey, the process of seeking and questioning.
That makes sense. I mean, it's like we were saying earlier about those aha moments.
Right.
Maybe cultivating virtue is kind of like that.
Maybe it's about being open to those moments of inspiration. When something just clicks and you suddenly see things in a new light.
And maybe it's also about putting in the work.
Absolutely.
Like you were saying, actively seeking knowledge, reflecting on our choices.
Yeah. Making a conscious effort to align our actions with our values.
So it's kind of like we're creating the conditions
mm.
for virtue to take root and flourish.
I love that analogy.
And who knows, maybe that's what makes us worthy of receiving that divine gift in the first place.
Right. Maybe it's not about being chosen, but about choosing ourselves.
Wow, that's really powerful.
It is, isn't it?
It is. I think that's the perfect note to end on.
Yeah, I agree.
Thanks again for joining us for this deep dive into Plato's Metano.
It's been a pleasure as always.
And until next time, keep those minds curious.
And never stop questioning.
Exactly. We'll see you all next time.